It is Tuesday, August 21st, and you are listening to the Outsiders Underground Comic Book Podcast. Hey everybody, this is the Outsiders Comic Book Underground Podcast, coming to you direct from our secret underground volcano lair.
Pretty hot here.
It's actually very hot.
This is episode 2. We are your hosts, Wade Wilberforce Salim.
Omar Saul Kennedy.
Mark. What's my name again?
Gibson.
That's pretty poor. Names?
No.
Khalil Goodman.
Yes.
Mark and Khalil, you guys like the nicknames I gave y'all?
No.
I like mine.
Okay, well, today we're going to start with some movie news, I think. Okay, so the rights for Daredevil are about to go back to Marvel. Fox was supposed to start production on a Daredevil movie by October, or they might lose the rights, and it doesn't seem like they're going to get started, so it seems like the rights are going to go back to Marvel. Fox even asked Marvel to go in co-financing with them, mm-hmm. or for an extension on the time, but Marvel said no, obviously, I would assume.
What a change.
Yeah, because Marvel was pretty buying up a while back.
Hey, exactly, yeah. You know. Now they're calling shots.
Yeah, calling shots with DC, but Disney backing them.
Yep,
well, I think, from what I remember reading, Marvel wanted back not the entire Fantastic Four universe. They just wanted, I think it was Galactus and Silver Surfer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I understand Fox is moving on with they're starting production on Fantastic Four.
Yeah, they're doing I think it's another reboot. You know, the world of reboots. Yeah. It's another one.
I think they need it.
Do they?
I think they need it for the FF. I
don't know.
I would like Marvel to get about hotter properties.
I would too, actually. Yeah. That'd be sweet.
But Jessica Alba was kind of hot.
Dude, yeah, Jessica Alba is way hot, but Jessica Alba's acting ability is
It's a bit subpar.
The blonde wig, isn't she like kind of Latino-ish?
No, that's her hair.
She's just bleached.
But doesn't she look kind of Latino? She doesn't look like
she's part Mexican.
Yeah, right. No, she doesn't look
part Filipino.
That doesn't bother me.
It was a little off-putting for me.
Like
Khalil said, the acting ability was.
But that bothered me.
But the I think what is exciting about the news is also that they wanted Galactus and Silver Surfer, which is because Guardians of the Galaxy is coming out.
Oh yeah.
And
but Fantastic Four never had a Galactus in it.
You got
a cloud, right?
True. I see what you're saying.
But technically, Fox has the rights to Galactus.
Basically, for them, whatever characters they put in their movies, they own. You know, so they might have started off with Fantastic Four, but once they started bringing in Doom and Silver Surfer and Galactus, they know. Part of their roster.
Yeah, that's more like quasi Doom. I wouldn't even really call that Doom.
Yeah, he has an American accent.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was awful.
What we have to look at though is with a Daredevil movie, what's Marvel going to do with Daredevil? That's more exciting. Like what? Because there was a thing earlier about the treatment that they were going to use. The original intention for the Daredevil movie was this kind of gritty, dark film, mm-hmm. which I think some people have been happy to see.
I would prefer that, yes.
I wonder what Marvel is going to do now that they have. Are they going to be making a Daredevil movie?
Well, Marvel's making an Eldie part for well. And Devon Field yet, have they?
No.
They've done a pretty decent job.
Yeah, Marvel's done a series of pretty good movies.
Their Hulk movies haven't really thrilled me. I mean, I liked the Ang Lee movie when I started, but that was still kind of artsy.
I actually liked the Hulk in that. I liked the action.
Yeah.
The jumping and stuff. They didn't really do that in the second one.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Harley, he was like claiming like a monkey and whatnot, but the jumping in the first one was awesome.
It was epic, yeah. When he fought,
loved it.
Was throwing up the tanks. Yeah, that was nice.
I loved it.
But on a whole movie, I wasn't very happy
doing
with it.
In terms of trauma and the abuse from his family. Mm-hmm. I like that angle. It just
kind of went too deep.
There was too much of a lot of him staring at her rock covered in moss.
Yeah.
What I didn't like was the way they edited it with the comic book panel type
but
thing.
But he did that to
I don't like it.
You don't like that?
No, it was awful.
I liked that.
It seemed campy.
I really liked it.
It seemed a bit campy.
See, that's what happens when somebody who isn't a comic book fan does a comic book movie. They kind of think that, this is what comic book fans are going to like. This is comic booky and stuff.
That's argument. I mean, Watchmen was done by a comic book fan, and while we all like Watchmen, it does drag a bit.
It does.
You know, because he's so Zach is so slavish to the source material.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's just kind of more of a balance. But Daredevil is going to be a movie. And do we want to see Daredevil? How do we want to see him? Do we want to see Elektra? Do we want to see Bullseye?
I don't want to see Ben Affleck. That's what I don't want to see.
I did not have a problem with Ben. Ben wasn't a bad Daredevil. It was just a bad script.
The whole playground script.
The playground scheme.
The playground scene was nice.
It was nice.
I liked it.
It was kind of silly, wasn't it?
I wasn't a fan of Jennifer Garner. I mean, sorry. Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with her. I love her in Alias, but the Elektra movie itself was horrible.
I found her better as Elektra in the Elektra movie than I found her as Elektra in the Daredevil movie.
But the movie itself was horrible.
Was quite
that was subpar, awful.
But yeah. she kind of was more interesting in the Elektra movie. Hmm. But if not Ben, we have ideas of who we think would make a good Daredevil. Who would make a good Murdoch?
I don't know. I really like Michael Duncan Clark though as Fisk.
That was cool. Yeah, I like that.
You know, actually, Colin Farrell wouldn't be a bad Matt Murdock. You know, and he played Bullseye, but I see him as Daredevil.
That's just you.
That's just me.
Four men in this room, only one actually agrees with me.
That's just me. All right, cool.
Yeah. What would be exciting though is seeing the possibility of seeing Daredevil in the next Avengers movie. Probably, well, might not be the next one, but maybe in Avengers 3. That'd be cool.
I was just going to say, it'd be nice to see Spidey, but I don't think Sony are going to give it those rights.
I would love to see Spidey.
Sony doesn't give those rights. I don't think so.
No, even if they did, they would get the amount of money they would charge to do that. It's going to be exorbitant.
Because they made money off your last one, so they're
So listeners, if you're following us on Twitter, it'd be good if you could tweet who you think would make a good Daredevil.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Would be interested
to
hear, because I have a feeling they're just gonna like make Ryan Reynolds Daredevil.
Oh, dear God,
since he's everything else.
Green Lantern, Deadpool, Connor McLeod.
He's gonna be the new Highlander.
All right, McLeod.
Deadpool.
Yeah.
That was awful too, by the way.
I agree. I liked Wolverine Origins.
That was an awful movie, dude.
You liked it. Are you high?
It was the
I'm gonna smack him to get out.
What was off about
Deadpool? Right, that's your only issue with it, right? Deadpool.
No.
Right? What else you have?
Wolverine jumping off a bike and knocking on a helicopter.
Yes, that was cool as hell.
I have many. That was cool.
You dude, shut up. That was cool. Honestly,
I've already said on the Outsiders group what I have problems with. I have problems with the fact that you have Gambit have one fight scene with Wolverine and then Gambit disappears.
Mm-hmm. Until the end.
Mm-hmm. I have a problem with the fact that somehow an adamantium bullet erases Wolverine's memory.
Please, Khalil, preach.
Even though
preach.
The man is covered head to toe in adamantium.
And of course, he knows for a fact that if I shoot someone with adamantium skeleton with an adamantium bullet, he will lose his memory.
Don't they say that sharpened adamantium can cut a sheet adamantium? Don't they say that?
Even so, that would cause somebody to lose their memory?
Come on, a bullet.
That was intentional. Was that intentional? That was
intentional. It was sketchy. It was sketchy writing.
Super sketchy. And also, the one part that really got me was he like leaves Silver Fox. She's like, yeah, he's like, I'm not going to help you, whatever. He's walking away. Then she screams and he runs back. Like, I thought you were done with her. Like, what happened? What was the motivation?
Yeah, I know.
I do like seeing Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
I did.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But they say that they're going to, maybe this is a good time for us to segue into the fact that they're talking about a new Wolverine movie.
Yes, there are.
The Wolverine.
The Wolverine.
And they're using the Wolverine miniseries as the backdrop. Wolverine in
Japan.
That
was an awesome time.
And that is going to be, I think, really good.
Yeah.
If they do it right. Wolverine is a samurai. It's pretty good. He seems to be the only like big name actor in the cast, though, but
I don't mind.
I don't mind that. That was a solid story.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think that when first movie does badly, that the crew learns from their mistakes and they make a better one. Although that did not happen with Clash of the Titans, because apparently the second one was pretty bad too.
Yeah, that's horrible. But back to the comic books.
We digress.
For me, Wolverine, I think they were doing the classic, you know, fall down point for a lot of these comic book movies where they end up packing too many characters into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's only like an hour, it's only like 2 hours long, maybe 2.5 hours at the most. But you had all sorts of mutants showing up in that Wolverine.
Well, I mean, yes, I agree with you, Mark. But sometimes seeing different mutants in the background is kind of fun. It makes the first two X-Men movies really kind of cool. The problem is when you try and make them like somehow part of the plot.
Yeah,
that it becomes a problem.
I agree with that.
I mean, an example of that would be X-Men 3. when they just pack so many mutants in just to have them in.
That was not good. I'm sorry. That just
derails the film because you're trying to deal with so many things.
I don't know. I guess when I watch a bad comic book movie, I shut off my brain and just enjoy the action and the scenery because that's what I enjoyed about X-Men 3. It was just a lot of fun, just a lot of mindless action.
Have you seen Ghost Rider?
Ghost Rider was terrible.
I haven't seen Ghost Rider.
That's a good
thing. Mark, you telling me about it.
It was terrible.
He says it's the worst comic book movie, but I think it isn't.
No, it's not. It's not.
The spirit is the worst. Thank you, Mark.
I actually prefer the spirit
over
Ghost Rider.
Oh, boy.
No, Ghost Rider 2 actually almost made me weep uncontrollably.
Have you seen the spirit?
Yes, I have. It was not as bad as Ghost Rider 2.
No,
I can't understand what Frank Miller was aiming for, but it did not work.
No,
it was horrible.
No, it did not. It was horrible.
It was horrible.
But it was not as bad as Ghost Rider 2.
I have to watch Ghost Rider 2. I haven't seen
it. No. You'll be doing yourself a disservice. Yeah. I'm warning you from no.
No, that was Howard the Duck.
I liked Howard the Duck as a child.
I did too.
I haven't watched it because I heard it was so bad.
I
look at
the rose colored glasses with nostalgia.
Exactly.
I can't remember it fondly, but I guess I have to see it again.
I watched it by Dwayne, actually. Remember?
Oh, really?
I watched it by Dwayne a long time ago.
I'll watch it again. All right. Green Arrow, the TV series. That's going to launch pretty soon.
Looking forward to that.
These trailers for it. And it looks a little grittier than Smallville, which I am not a fan of. But,
correct.
It looks how does it look
very gritty. The action sequences in the trailer look very cool.
Yep.
The romance and stuff looks like it may be a very kind of, is it on WB?
CW.
It feels like a very CW show.
It does.
All beautiful people.
Everybody's pretty. Yeah. And the acting may probably vary from actor to actor. But the action sequence looks really good. Mm. He looks really tough. If you're on Comixology, there's a preview comic out, Arrow, that came out this week.
I said Green Arrow.
But I like the poster they put up recently where he has all the scars on his body and stuff. It looks very like...
Lisa Harris loves that one.
Shout out to Lisa Harris and Mel Young, who loves these pretty boys, salt shirts.
Now, I have a question. There was supposed to be a Green Arrow movie for a long time called Supermax.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So what was that in development hell? What's going on there?
I think it had potential. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Supermax was, the basic premise was that Oliver Queen's character, Green Arrow, he gets locked away in this prison for supervillains.
Mm.
And so it's kind of like Green Arrow meets Prison Break. So the whole thing, he gets sent to prison. I think he's undercover.
Something.
But... you know, he's in the prison, he's got to survive, and he's got to break out. That was the general premise.
So he's in the prison with all the guys who he helped to put in there in the first place. So it's supposed to be pretty...
Isn't that the same premise as that Guy Pearce film that just came out?
Lock.
Oh, you mean in space or something?
Yeah. But I think they sent
him in to do some stuff. I don't think he got locked in there.
Yeah, they sent him in.
Okay, that also sounds like... If Guy Pearce was younger, he would make a good Green Arrow.
Yes, actually, I can agree with that.
But Ollie isn't young.
I know, but they're not on the cast.
They're not on the cast. Anybody for a superhero movie that is pushing 40.
He's a prison superhero. Ollie's pretty much older than the rest of the league, isn't he?
Trust me,
but Mark's right. We're talking about Hollywood. If you want to have a franchise, franchise, say if it has three films, it's going to take at least 6 to 8 years per film.
Mm-hmm.
The person will get older, and they want to keep the person young. That's why they usually have younger actors playing the parts.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, the only buddy that doesn't meet that mold is Robert Downey Jr. And that's because he's not Iron Man out of the park.
Yeah.
Because he is Tony Stark.
He's Tony Stark right off the page.
Even when he's not acting as Tony Stark, his Tony lifestyle, Stark. His whatever, he is Tony Stark. Even if his head
they've actually, I don't know if they've modeled Tony Stark in the comic to resemble him completely in terms of personality, or if that's who Tony Stark always was. Tony Stark seems to be more Tony Stark now in the comics than he was before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of Iron Man news, there is some talk about what's going to happen to the franchise after the third movie.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel is already, tossing out the idea of going the Bond route.
Can they recast Tony Stark though?
They're looking to recast Robert Downey Jr.
Good luck.
They've only gone locked in for 3 Iron Man films, probably with a couple other Avengers films and so on. But the question is, will he do a 4th Iron Man movie?
I hope they're looking to pay a lot of money because he's going to ask for it.
I think he deserves it. I mean, he certainly was paid more than the rest of his cast members.
Yeah, by far.
Yeah.
Because
he was smart. like Tony Stark. Little side note, Guy Pearce is also going to be in Iron Man 3.
Oh, right. Sweet.
Yeah. Who's that from? Do we know?
Aldrich Killian? I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not familiar with that name.
Killian.
I could look at
it. One side note, do we have Ben Kingsley's playing Mandarin, right?
Who?
Ben Kingsley is playing the Mandarin.
Yes. Is that kind of like Hollywood whitewashing again? I mean,
Mandarin supposedly.
Ben Kingsley played Gandhi. So. No, that was epic. He played Gandhi.
He's not Indian or he's not, he's not Asian.
He's
part.
He's half Indian.
He's half Indian?
Yeah.
Well, he's not Asian, is he? No.
No.
No, right? I'm pretty sure Mandarin is.
But I guess they're like, well, we can't use. The only other Asian that they use for most things is Ken Watanabe. And they're like, well, we've already used him for Batman. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
That's how you pronounce it.
Watanabe?
Yeah, I
didn't. I don't know.
I love Ken Watanabe. He's great.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's the whole question of whitewashing, I guess.
Whitewashing. Yeah.
I don't know. I would prefer to get a quality actor to carry the role.
Like Ben Kingsley.
But don't we
Ben
have Kingsley quality, have quality Asian actors?
Yeah.
Right. Besides Ken Watanabe.
You have Chow Yun Fat.
It's pretty small.
Mm-hmm. Although he can be hit or miss, he tends to, when he's good, he's good.
I don't see him as
and when
a
he's bad, he's horrid.
I don't know.
Really? So.
I don't see him either, but you know, he is a quality Asian actor.
Okay. Yeah.
He's huge in
Hong Kong.
Yeah, he is.
Mm-hmm. But I have no problem with Kingsley playing it. I mean, I wish they could find. I mean, there are tons of Asian actors, but that's the problem with Hollywood that we could go on about.
Yeah.
But he is a very good actor.
Oh, phenomenal.
And I think he has the crazy eyes. And he should make a good Mandarin. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever found Mandarin scary?
No,
honestly. I mean, you have those rings. Are you still get your ass kicked all the time?
I found him intimidating once. I believe it was close to Iron Man 300 when he was in China and Feng Fang Foom was there and there were like hundreds of dragons all about and Mandarin had like lost his mind and he was like all thugged out. I was one time I found him just a little bit intimidating. At the end of the series, Iron Man blows Mandarin's hands off, and I guess that was the end of that.
Mm. The only villain I find genuinely scary is Ultron, to be honest.
Yeah, Ultron terrifies me.
Ultron terrifies me.
Yeah.
That whole a whole conscienceless, emotionless robot thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can't reason with him, man. He just looks, his look.
I also, he has this his grin look, on his face, you know? It's like, yeah, he's very devious.
I liked, what's that guy's name? The Immortus.
Yeah, it's never really.
Mini
big purple hat.
He's been both Kang and Immortus. Right?
Yeah.
I find him scary.
I don't find him scary.
I like him. He's a good villain. And Master Pandemonium.
Master Pandemonium. Oh yeah, he's awesome.
Oh yeah.
That's fantastic.
Those two demon hands and stuff. That
from
was,
from
yeah,
Mephisto.
Now I'll start with AVX number 10, Avengers vs. X-Men number 10. For those of you who may not have been reading comics for the past couple of years, a few years ago, a young mutant lady by the name of Scarlet Witch went batshit insane and decimated the mutant population, brought them down from millions to 198. Right.
198.
Although I heard it wasn't really 188.
Yeah,
just, that was
you
just
count
like,
them as like 200 and
right, that was just like the initial figure that they came up with.
But 200 and say 220.
Right, from a million is quite a bit. Yeah. So fast forward a few more years, and the Phoenix Force, which has caused quite a bit of problems in the past, is on its way to Earth, presumably to choose a host. The X-Men and the Avengers both believe it is the so-called mutant messiah, Hope Summers, and the X-Men are obviously excited about this particular Cyclops because he sees it as a way to basically jumpstart the mutant race again and bring about from the brink of extinction. The Avengers a little bit less so because, you know, the Phoenix Force has caused some problems. So the Avengers go to take Hope into custody and obviously the X-Men have a big problem with this and so the shit hits the fan. After that, Tony Stark interferes and the Phoenix Force splits itself into five of the X-Men. Cyclops, Emma Frost, Colossus, Namor, and Magic. And they're the Phoenix Five. So, in the course of the story, three of the X-Men get taken down, the Phoenix Five, and we're left at this point with Cyclops and Emma Frost. In AVX number 10, Hope is in Kunlun with the Avengers, and Cyclops tracks her there.
With Iron Fist,
right. The Avengers try to hold him off, but at this point, Cyclops is incredibly powerful, mm-hmm. and he kicks the hell out of them. And they eventually bring in their big gun, Scarlet Witch, but she's no match for Cyclops either, because you know he now has the combined power of
mm-hmm.
all the other X-Men who've fallen. And the Avengers even recruit Shao Lao, the Undying,
mm-hmm.
the dragon, but he's too young at this point, because I guess it's the same dragon that would have died after Iron Fist got his power, and is a new, he's pretty young, so he's not powerful enough, but he did put Cyclops on the run. So eventually Hope pulls out some, I don't know, something, some, what was that? That was some,
okay,
that was some shadow power, or
we've had
she sucked me, Sphinx Wars, I don't know what.
No, she manifests the power of the dragon
right.
first, and
shoots
it
right.
from her mouth,
mm-hmm.
and hurts Cyclops. And then we see her combine Scarlet Witch's powers and Iron Fist's powers.
That's what it was?
And punches, so that's what it says, Chaos
she, right,
Fist.
But she punched Cyclops.
She uses Scarlet
yeah.
Witch's Chaos powers and the Iron Fist punch. And teleports him from
literally
Earth,
to the moon.
Literally to the moon,
and punches ass
in the where he's
moon.
Not unconscious. Which
but
is
what
amazing.
Did she do at first? She kind of like turned off his powers.
No, she hits him with the dragon's powers, which hurts him.
Actually, yeah,
no, no,
did,
there was a scene where she like shut him off.
Where he fell. Well, see, this is my, I mostly have been enjoying AVX, but it has been uneven. But for 10 issues,
rare.
She has forgotten that she has powers, and I don't understand.
You mean Hope?
Yeah, I don't
yeah.
understand how Hope. Wait, hold on. She turns them off.
Yeah, she turns them
yeah,
off for like
yeah.
a second.
That page, right?
And he was like, "Wait, how did you?" You know.
Right, and so we have this moment where she remembers she's had powers, but in issue 2 of this run, she manifests the Phoenix, and then we don't see her use any of her
again.
Powers
yeah.
for literally 8 issues. And that's one of the things that I've had a slight problem with. But obviously, this is a big crossover. It's spanning the entire Marvel series, and they want you to keep buying the books.
Mm-hmm.
So they've drawn this out. When she does manifest her powers, it does look pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a slight problem with this issue in that a lot of the fighting doesn't have a kind of a sense of urgency
yeah, it doesn't.
To it. Like, it's basically the Avengers show up for one or two panels, mm. face Cyclops, get cut down, and he keeps moving.
Mm.
Last issue, when Namor is fighting the Avengers, you kind of feel like
mm.
there's urgency.
Mm-hmm.
The Avengers are literally, like, fighting him to the end kind
mm-hmm.
of thing, and they have to keep piling up on him. In this one, Cyclops is just, like, there. The only real kind of action sequence that was really kind of compelling, to me at least, was when Iron Man attacks Cyclops. That looked really cool, and it
mm.
felt like he was really fighting. But other than that,
well,
this
I
one
think,
felt a little bit.
I think for this
filler.
Issue, the urgency isn't there. When the Avengers were facing off against Namor, it's because Namor is batshit crazy.
Yeah.
He was there to wipe Wakanda off the face of the
earth. But Cyclops is going insane in this one.
Cyclops
still thinks he's in control.
Yeah.
No,
but he's very
no,
dark
I mean,
side.
He can see he's going
he's,
off. I mean, he's real desperate and
I like
and
the comparison to Mussolini.
Yeah, well, yeah.
With that, it just shows that although he has he wants something which is supposed to be good, he's stomping. He's gonna stomp on other people
mm.
to get what he wants.
As opposed to Emma,
who
seems Emma seems to be completely off the rails. I mean, Emma's
yeah.
mm-hmm.
she's using her powers like, on other mutants. She locked down Magneto, and she is gone.
Yeah.
Well, I disagree. I think this one, Cyclops has really like lost it.
He's being a measured, it's kind of measured madness.
Yeah.
You know?
But he's still
right,
not trying
right
to kill
there.
Anybody
or
hurt anybody too badly,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to Emma.
Yeah, well, Emma's not hurting them. She's just
but
asking
she will.
To worship
she
her
will.
As a goddess.
Yeah,
but Cyclops is literally like saying, he says to Iron Fist, like, "You're too small. You can't hurt me."
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's also like full on Magneto crazy.
Correct. Okay. Well,
you know?
Fair enough.
But for this one, for Scott, he didn't come to Kunlun to pick a fight. He came just for Hope.
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
realized he's got the power. They can't actually stop him.
Yeah.
So, you know, why get
and
on?
He tells him to, like, stay down. You know, I don't want, you know, but
mm-hmm.
know, whatever.
Right. All right. The only thing is, I wish that they had somehow, like, at least reminded us that Hope had some power before this. Also... Hope's powers are still kind of undefined, because before
mm-hmm.
she could only manifest the powers of mutants
in her
and in this one
mm-hmm.
Which is that she was around. But even in the end of Messiah Complex, which is a better crossover than this, when she fights Bastion at the end of that series, she manifests the Phoenix and a lot of other mutants' powers. And that's when we find out that she basically can manifest any mutant's powers. But in this one, she's manifesting not just mutant
Iron
powers,
Fist as well,
but also Iron Fist and the powers of the dragon. Yeah, so I hope that's explained. Iron Man says he knows why, so I guess we have to wait 4 weeks.
What I found a bit weird too is, like I said, the books don't seem to be in sync. I don't know, because I don't know if you guys read Avengers number 29.
Yeah.
Right, and that Professor Rex took down Rachel Summers, and then he was like, well, you know what, I can't raise my hand against my children, and this is wrong, and he mind wiped everybody and said, I'm just letting everything go as it was going to go originally, I'm not going to get involved. And then in AVX number 10, he's there saying, you know, I can't let Scott and Emma put on the mutant race. I gotta stop this.
Well, so, I think what happened is he's been indecisive. What is really cool about this issue, I think, is for a long time, both Professor X and Magneto have been very peripheral to the whole X-Men.
Not again involved.
I mean, 6-7 years now, it's really been Cyclops and Wolverine.
Yeah.
And you see them both struggling, both Magneto and Professor X struggling to not only be relevant, but to figure out where they are in this conflict. And I while I liked Cyclops fighting the Avengers, what I liked more in this issue, and what I think was really worth buying this issue, was that little scene between Magneto and Emma.
It was.
When he's like, what are you doing? And she's like, well, you can't tell me what to do. You have more sins than I do.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of interesting, because you see the struggle. Like, even he's struggling to, I don't know if she's mind-controlling him, but struggling to contact Charles, and Charles is also struggling to figure out where he stands in this conflict. And that, if nothing else, if you're a big X-Men fan and you felt like these two characters have been sidelined for a long time, which they have, it's nice to see them being part of the action and also being conflicted, you know, because it shows kind of how far we've moved to a new center where Cyclops and Wolverine are kind of the center, and Magneto and Charles are now a different part of it.
And Professor X is badass. He took down Rachel Summers like nothing. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was crazy.
I don't know. Like Khalil says, one of my biggest issues with this entire crossover is how peripheral Hope and Wanda have been. They're probably two, you know, real powerhouses of this whole, you know, bundle. But they've been on the edges for the whole thing. I mean, Hope, I can understand. She's kind of like, you know, the fox, or well, the hare in this whole, you know, fox chase. Yeah. But Wanda, she's just been on the edge for no real reason.
I wish that they had had more internal dialogue from the characters for this crossover.
That's something
in
this
issue two. Yeah. Issue two, we actually had, or issue three, we actually had Hope's dialogue as she was running away, going to the moon. And we understood what she was doing. And that's the only issue so far in the main AVX books that they've had that.
You guys miss some editor boxes? You know the little boxes you used to have up in the tops of comics?
Especially I don't miss editor boxes so much, but I do want more of that internal dialogue. It would be nice to see mentally, we're kind of seeing it with Emma a little bit, because she's you actually see her thinking last issue, like, I'm losing control. You actually hear her thinking that, or see her thinking that. It would be good to see, like, what Scarlet Witch is thinking, what Hope is thinking, you know, what Cyclops is thinking.
Yeah.
Because that Infinity comic, AVX6, which is entirely about Cyclops in his own mind, thinking about how to balance out the Phoenix power and speaking with Jean. Like, that was a really great issue, and I felt it was unfortunate that it was only digital, because people couldn't read it physically. If you only buy, you know, physical comics, you were missing a really good story, and it was a good insight into the struggle that Cyclops is facing having this power. And I just wish that this crossover had more of that.
Yeah, there is actually an Infinity comic attached to AVX number 10. You guys read that one? You didn't see it?
No, I didn't.
I saw it, but
there's actually one with it's about Tony Stark. He developed some machine, some headband, to put on the Scarlet Witch to project, you know, her powers of probability.
Yeah,
she projects all the different probabilities the way the battle could go. And I think the Infinity comic really suits that kind of story, because you saw three possibilities. Because the three Avengers who could possibly turn the tide were Iron Man, Thor, and Wolverine. So you saw all three possibilities of what would happen when they go up against Cyclops. And eventually it turned out that the only body who could stop Cyclops would have been, I think it was Hope, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You didn't really see it fade out. It's sort of like a faded picture, but I think it was Hope.
Because I think that kind of illustrates the point that me and Khalid are making, how marginalized Hope has been for this entire event. I mean, even the big minds like Tony Stark and this whole debacle
have forgotten about Hope.
They've been too focused initially on protecting her, keeping her away from the X-Men. Mm-hmm. Then it's just about, you know, fighting for survival. And Hope is the entire key to this thing. And it took that little Infinity Comic tie-in to you know, make that point clear.
And they display it when she tossed Cyclops, you know.
And, you know, I do agree with Khalil. While Infinity Comics, while digital comics are a nice new way to go, I think there's some, everybody doesn't have it as yet. Okay. And that's a core part of this story.
I mean, you guys know, yeah, I'm a purist and everything, but I actually think this, if comics have to evolve, I think this is the way to go. I love the Infinity Comics. I could read them. It's like watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these scene shifts, and it's like almost like those little flip books when you flip and you see a moving picture. It's mm-hmm. like that.
But it keeps the integrity of the comic book medium.
It does.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
It's not the same as a motion comic.
I
don't have a problem with it. I don't, but something like this, where you have some very, very critical development, it's kind of happening behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. At this point, every comic book fan doesn't have access to digital comics.
Right.
No. Right.
And even if you're reading all the other AVX books, the Infinity Comic 6 and the Infinity Comic 10 are actually pretty solid stories that
work well
for everybody to see. But anyway.
All right, but in the as far as the art in the book goes... All right, we're going to move on to our next book. Omar, you wanted to talk about...
Yes, Rorschach. I, before Watchmen, Rorschach was absolutely fantastic to me. I really loved it. Even from the cover, when you looked at it, you see Rorschach's face right there, big, and the design in his face, the actual Rorschach in his face actually is of Rorschach. So I found that to be pretty, pretty cool. Brian Azzarello was the writer, Lieber Mijo was the artist, and I believe that the art was nice and really gritty.
I never liked him before. He did Lex Luthor Man of Steel or something a while back.
I didn't see that.
I didn't like his art back then, but I think it is evolved and I like it. I really like it for the story. It was fantastic.
Definitely, it was good. The opening splash was utterly spectacular. There was a view of New York City that was absolutely stunning. It was good. You get a nice feel for New York. It is gritty, it is dirty. It has hints of Alan Moore's New York and Watchmen, a mix between Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns and Basin City and Sin City. I just feel the dirt in the city, and I really love that. Sometimes it seems to go a bit over the top in terms of the grunge and whatever have you, with all the horrors and the salacious behavior that was going on.
There was a lot of horrors about this.
Yeah, there was. Yeah. There was. In the 70s and 80s, New York was a really dirty place before the mayor, I can't remember which mayor it was, cleaned up.
It was not Bloomberg, was it Giuliani?
No. Not Giuliani. It was
Giuliani. It was that whole Disneyfication thing.
Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah, but they really cleaned up New York. I didn't realize New York really was a shithole back then. So I do get the feeling for it. Rorschach seems to be a bit more witty of his puns and some of the things he says. It's almost Arnold Schwarzenegger-ish, but from the 80s. But it was okay, you know. The line of, can you feel your hand? Where your hand is, and it's like, yeah, it's touching my ass. If I have to come back here, I'm going to put your hand up in it. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And that hand.
I love seeing Rorschach in his praying. You know, he's on top of his game at this point. He's not the broken down mess that he is in Watchmen.
Well, he still is a little broken
he's
here.
He's crazy, but he's in his praying. He's clean, at least, you know what I mean?
He's a bit cleaner. You know, he's a bit cleaner. He's not as bad as he was in actual Watchmen, but you can see he's not quite right in this. One thing with the plot that I didn't get was when he goes down into the sewers and he gets ambushed by the gang, why did they not kill him?
That's why I was saying. I think they went to kill him, but they didn't make sure he was dead. I mean, you just beat him and leave him? That didn't make any sense to me.
That didn't make any sense to me. I thought that was a major plot hole.
That was
within.
It was
you can't die from a brutal beating.
Yes, but
he's such a thorn in your side, you're going to make sure he's dead, not leave him.
Yeah, well, I think the final panel, he says, you know, they didn't make sure that was
was stupid to me.
That was a little off for me. To go through all that, because remember, it took him days in the sewers to find these guys. And unless for days they were sitting in the sewers deliberating whether to kill this guy or not, If I was waiting in the sewers for days to beat somebody, I'm going to kill them for making them stay in damn sewers for days. You know? So, I'm not just going to beat him. I was going to take one of the guns that they had and shot him in the gut, shot him in the chest. I know they said that they wanted the mask to stay on so people would know, yes, this is Rorschach who is dead. But shoot him in the chest or something.
Well, it could be as simple as underestimating your opponent. I mean, most regular people,
you put a beam on them. But you need to make sure they're not breathing anymore.
But don't forget, this is not just an opponent. This is Rorschach. And New York is scared of this man. You're not just going to beat him and hope he dies. You're going to finish him off.
Finish him off.
That's just my opinion on it.
It could be a plot hole, I know.
It is a plot hole, but apart from that, the book was pretty sweet. The art was good. I love the villains. There were two villains. There is somebody called the Bard, who is a very clean villain. He's very sterile. He is very polished. He works in
serial killer.
He's a serial killer. He's killing women and carving them up in what appears to be a very sterile environment. And then in a contradiction, he ends up dumping them in a dumpster. And that villain, in contrast to the big boss of the gang, that
what's his name, Bird or Bicool or Crane,
something like that.
Bicool,
who is the complete opposite of the Bard. The Bard doesn't seem to be in complete control of himself, because the things that he's carving in the women, I can't help myself, but I don't need to. I can't see myself, but neither can you. I don't think he's all there. So,
most serial killers are.
Well, yeah. So this, in comparison to Big Cool now, or whatever his name is, he is definitely all there. He is not as polished. He's willing to wait down in the sewers for all this time. His face is a mess. You can tell that something is wrong with him. He has this jigsaw, two-face type feel to him. But he is definitely in control. And I think the comparison between the two villains will really give Rorschach something to deal with over the course of this book.
I really liked Bermejo.
Yeah. Bermejo.
We were just saying that.
It's so gritty and so detailed. The only thing that I thought maybe could have been improved was, if you look at it, a lot of it is very static images. Like, there are a lot of tableaus. There's not actually a lot of movement. And when you look at each of the panels, almost everything is just kind of very still. But because it's so gritty, you can get around that. And Azzarello, I think, has a good handle on Rorschach's voice, and it's really good. I mean, I think I liked Rorschach a little bit more in Night Owl number 2 that we reviewed last week.
Yeah.
I like his interaction with Night Owl. Yeah. Him by himself, even though he's a fan favorite, I'm less interested in him when he doesn't have somebody as a contrast.
Like Night Owl or whatever.
But it was a solid, good book. How are you rating this one, guy?
I'd give it a 4 still, despite the glaring plot hole, in my opinion. I'd give it a 4.
Yeah, I'd give it a 3.5. We didn't read X-Men, though.
I'd give it a 3.5. Oh, X-Men?
AVX. I'd give that a 3.5.
Yeah,
I'd give it a 3.5 as well.
Yeah.
I guess so. I won't go ahead on that.
Yeah. It was definitely... Rorschach was a good issue, but it's a setup issue.
Yeah.
For what's coming. Mm-hmm. So, I'm looking forward to seeing what Azzarello does. Because Azrael did Wonder Woman,
yes,
and
he
knocked it out of the park. I know Mark wants to talk about it.
Well, that's Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I probably raved about Wonder Woman before. What I like about it for sure is that it is taken, the writer Azzarello, he's taken a good effort to redevelop a lot of the background, a lot of the foundation for Wonder Woman, without making her too, completely new. Alright, where do I start with this show? I actually sat down and made some notes. let me.
Notes was pretty much, this issue was so awesome. This issue was so awesome.
I love it.
It was so freaking awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty much my...
Well, for me, I really think if you haven't started reading Wonder Woman, and if you do, you're going to need to get your geek credentials revoked, because this is definitely one of the top issues for the New 52, seriously speaking.
You have problems with the New 52, understandably, you have to read Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Because it is one of the best series. I mean, and this was a really good year for this series. Like, almost every issue has been fantastic.
Yep, every issue has been spot on.
It definitely isn't the Wonder Woman from before.
I disagree. Really? I think he has a good handle on her.
Yeah.
She's powerful.
Yeah.
She's compassionate.
and
she's
still,
confident.
She's
very confident.
Very, like, she towers above everybody, but she's still. I mean, I think he has a really good handle on Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
The Amazons are different. The mythology is different in some ways.
But as
she
as
seems
a
more confident to me.
She's
very confident to me than she was before.
What I like about her is that is different from traditional Wonder Woman. She's still very much new to the man's world,
yeah.
But she knows who she is,
yes,
mm-hmm.
as a person. You know, she's trying to find her way, but she's not fumbling for it.
Mm-hmm.
Issue 12 picks up. You know, she's literally at a standoff against Apollo and Athena, trying to stop Apollo's takeover of Olympus because Zeus is, you know, absent. And while you have some good character development with this issue, while you do see the more of the evolution of Wonder Woman in terms of her powers, you get a lot of kick-ass fighting in this as well.
Mm.
In previous issues, I don't remember which one, but Wonder Woman did go up against Apollo and Athena, and she got her ass handed to her.
Last issue.
This one, the gloves
literally
come off. Well,
the bracelets come
off.
Yeah,
what's
new.
That all about?
Yeah.
Does she have like super god powers? And
that blew my mind.
She has Zeus's powers, it looks
yeah.
like.
Mm-hmm. My other question too, she can't fly, can she? Until
she can fly.
Until,
she can fly.
She can
now.
Fly.
She
can fly.
Now,
fly
right?
yeah.
That
Hermes
was also an amazing
moment. Yeah, yeah.
Like,
right.
Hermes gives her the gift of flight there.
Yeah. That's
then.
A permanent gift, or that's
oh,
well,
we
know Wonder Woman flies, and we know that her flight was given to her by Hermes. So
we
just
we did?
See it
yeah.
there.
Oh. When
this
throws
is
the
moment
with
here
the
when
yeah.
she gets it for the
yeah,
first
cool.
time
with the dart.
And it was, I mean, there's so many. Not to steal your thunder, Mark, but there's so many moments in this issue that are cool moments, both for. A combination of what's happened from
mm-hmm.
all the issues that have come before, and also just for this issue. And if you like the character, just seeing those kind of moments. Getting the power of flight was one.
Yep.
And taking
powers.
The bracelets off was another.
I mean,
yeah,
these
was...
bracelets come off and they drop and they're heavy.
And
they
break holes in the ground.
You
break holes in
the ground,
man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was like funny when she said, when Athena said, oh, you're taking off your only defense against me. I said, actually, no, this is.
These are yours.
This is to protect you.
I mean, imagine it. Wonder Woman is literally a demigod, and she beats down a full-fledged, full-blooded god.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She literally wipes
and easily
and mops
and easily
and polishes the floor with Athena, and she was
Artemis.
Ready to kill her.
Artemis.
Well, yeah, with Artemis,
yeah,
you know, it's like she was going berserk.
But my question is too, if she did not know before a few issues ago that she was Zeus's daughter, where did she think all that power came from?
Because she was special, she was made of clay.
Special made of clay? What is that?
Yeah.
That's
what her mother told her. She was made
yeah.
of clay.
So you
believe everything
so
your mother tells you.
It's what
so
even
you
the, that's what even what the Amazons.
So
you
that juiced
what,
up.
Even Hera does not know that she's the son of Zeus.
So you
got
she's all that juiced up just because she's made of clay. That doesn't make any sense.
And because she's wearing the bracelets.
Yeah, like no, she takes them off. She sees all this power. Where did that come from before? Where was that before? I mean, where did I get this from? That's what I was just wondering.
Well, I think
she would have had to suspected her godly origins. I don't know.
Well, over the last few issues, somewhere between issue 6 and issue 12, the last issue, she was slowly coming into the awareness of being Zeus's daughter,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of the early story arc for this was her protecting her human friend
Zola
who was carrying another one of Zeus's
bastard children. Zeus gets her own, though.
Yeah, Zeus is a real slut.
Well, even Apollo,
man whore.
Apollo and Artemis are not Hera's children either.
No, they aren't.
So,
yeah.
I mean, the only one in this that we see presently who is actually of Hera and Zeus is Strife.
It's Strife,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And Strife is a really good character.
Yeah.
Like, I've enjoyed her
yeah.
for these last
bit
12
of a dick,
issues. She's funny.
Yeah.
She's kind of terrible. She's great.
But that just adds to this entire issue, this entire series. You've got a nice, strong, well-developed Wonder Woman. You've got her backed up by some really interesting, compelling, supporting characters. And she's fully grounded in her world, her reality, the world of legend and myth.
Mm-hmm.
She's not run out there on the streets of New York or Metropolis or whatever, beating up muggers and stuff
yeah,
like
she's
that.
Not feeling any super villains.
No,
but,
yes.
but she's got villains.
Yes.
She's got villains.
But then we see, I mean,
at
we
the end,
up ahead.
The end was
okay,
fantastic. Yeah.
Read, listeners, please go out and read this issue.
Yeah, you got to buy it.
And
this is a bite.
Just for the last four panels.
The entire last page.
Are we
going to
spoil the last four panels?
No.
All I think the only thing to say is that Azarello has figured out a way to introduce
No, a new pantheon of gods. Don't say it. Okay, good. That's fine.
He's figured out a way to introduce a new pantheon of gods that you would not expect linked to Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
But
I
think it works with what has come before.
Agreed. I was expecting that in another book, to be honest.
I think it's great.
It blew my mind.
What I did like as well was the contradiction. You see Wonder Woman getting amped up. She's getting all these new powers. You see how diesel she is. And on the other hand, Hera, she becomes mortal. And, you know, she gets smacked in the face. She's bleeding. And it's like, hey, look at that. I really like that contrast. I think that was really, really cool.
If nothing else, I mean, these 12 issues have been about Wonder Woman and Hera.
Yep.
And so it makes sense to have this because it's also Hera's arc,
mm-hmm.
discovering Diana, and then also discovering other things about Diana have been her arc for this. And I like that. I didn't expect any of the things that happened in this issue.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. I'm happy with it though. I mean, seriously, I will admit I wasn't a huge Wonder Woman fan before 52. I liked her in Jelly. You know, the odd crossover and other people's books like Superman and stuff. But I think right now I'm a Wonder Woman fan. Seriously. This writer, Brian
Azzarello,
I think he really got a nice, firm grasp on this character. Mm-hmm. The artwork, I'm supposed to be reviewing Captain Marvel 2 as well. We'll get that later. My big issue with the artwork for this book, as well as for Captain Marvel, is the color palette. I realize that because the lead character is female, is like they're going with this whole softer, more feminine color palette.
I don't agree with that.
I think Cliff Chiang's art in Wonder Woman has been improving every issue.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't done every issue, but the ones he has done.
Yeah, I think it's been great. I think this issue was fantastic. I think the color is a brighter, more, I guess, a more cartoony type of color.
Yeah, I will say that. Yeah,
but I like it. I like it.
Everything that Chang has done, from the reinterpretation of the gods, the way that
they look, especially Hades. Yeah. Hades look is crazy.
Hades, Poseidon, Hephaestus, Hera, all of them look great. I love the way that Artemis and Apollo look.
Apollo's awesome. I love
it. And I like, Apollo's, as you said, Azzarello's way of his. He has a distinct voice for Strife. He's a distinct voice for Artemis. He's a distinct voice for Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
And he's definitely figured out the way that he wants to have Wonder Woman, and I have not had any problems with this series.
Correct. When I see Apollo, I think Kirby, for some reason, I think back to Jack Kirby. When I see the design, I just think right back
the
to
lines
Jack Kirby.
Are
very yeah, definitely.
Energy stuff and all that, yeah. Looks all like Sunspot too.
Yeah, yeah, he does, yeah.
Well, for sure, if I had to rate this, it's definitely a pickup. Not just for this issue 12, but if you haven't been following Wonder Woman, people. Now's the time. Go to your comic book store.
If you think that you want to wait for the trade, this would be a great trade. But
I agree.
Think that these 12 issues are worth getting.
Yeah.
For sure.
Do they do trades in 12 or are you doing 6 and 6?
Probably do 6 and 6.
Six. And six.
Yeah. They're making you buy them.
This is worth. Yeah. So it's a 5 for me for sure.
Yeah, I give it a 5 as well.
Yep.
Full stars for me.
Yeah.
What's next?
Okay, Khalil, what about Uncanny X-Force? You read that?
I did. I, as everyone knows, probably if you were to listen to our second issue, but I am a big Uncanny
X-Men.
Well, a big X-Men fan. But Uncanny X-Force under Rick Remender has been fantastic for these 28 issues. He has managed somehow to take the original premise, which was done pretty well with X-Force, and add a lot of psychological aspects to it, having the these characters, some of whom are heroes and some who are not heroes, the way that the violence that they're doing has impacted on them, and we see this very much in this issue. Quick backtrack, so you guys maybe have not don't know what's happening. Psylocke pulled the team using Gateway's powers, pulled the team into the future to escape a new brotherhood of mutants who killed one of the team members. And when she gets to the future, she finds a fascist world, kind of like, what is that film with Tom Cruise?
Minority Report.
Yeah. Very Minority Report, where they stop people from committing crimes before they
it
do them.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much the X-Force premise taken to its extreme end. And last issue finished with Psylocke trying to stop this future by stabbing herself in the abdomen.
Just ritual suicide.
Ritual suicide. And I've written down here that I really, really liked this kind of... It's the logical kind of place he's taken Psylocke. This is very much a Psylocke book for the last couple of issues. Okay, so there have been lots and lots of violence and extreme things happening to these X-Men assassins. And so basically this book is really emotionally complex and very violent. After stabbing herself through the stomach, we see Psylocke still having to fight off the Punisher and Wolverine
and Cable
and somehow still managing to fight them off even though she's very hurt. And and I liked that this issue, after all the dreariness, is kind of a signal for Psylocke's healing process is starting. There's a really beautiful mid-issue segment where Psylocke ends up possibly going into her own head or having a metaphysical experience, and the dreary color palette like shifts to these red and yellow. It's like, it's really beautiful. And if you were reading Remender's last good arc, which was the Dark Archangel arc, this is kind of a nice conclusion to that. Right, what was I saying? The opening pages of this are really amazing, but I like the colors that they use. I like the way that they've... It's basically a good kind of finishing point for what's been happening to Psylocke and also what's been happening to the team as a whole. And I like when Warren says to her, like, why long for sorrow? We know that Psylocke has lost her ability to feel sorrow.
She kind of wants it.
She gave it up in the last story arc.
Oh.
And if you felt like this series has been really dark for Psylocke, I think this is the beginning of the healing process for her. Other really good points of this is that Deadpool, Rick Remender writes the best Deadpool. He's funny, but he's not wacky. He is a good kind of like counterpoint to all the darkness in this issue. I like when he like forces Punisher to smile.
Yeah, I almost got shot.
I mean, if you have been reading Uncanny X-Force, you know that Remender and Opania have really done this team well. I mean, if nothing else happening in the X-World is making you happy, the Uncanny X-Force team is really good. And I want to see what happens now that she started this healing process and they've left the future, how they're going to go back to this kind of very dire situation, having one teammate dead, a new teammate they don't know about, and a kind of A-list set of villains ready to kill them when they get back. So I think some people maybe might not like the idea of having the X-Men so mired literally in blood, but this is definitely a series that I think is worth picking up.
Well, I really liked it too. I haven't been reading X-Force or any X-Books, but I picked this up on Khalil's recommendation. I wasn't a big fan of the art. It was a little, I don't know, shifty and painty looking. It's not my kind of thing, really. But I guess I liked it too because I like a lot of time travel, all in our universe stuff, so that's what grabbed me too. What I thought was a little silly was Ant-Man's outfit. You know, he had a uniform on the inside, the Ant-Man mask on. That was, what was that about? I don't know.
how else is he like send out waves?
Yeah, I guess it was kind of silly. I don't know, but I'll definitely stick around and keep reading it because I want to see what old Wolverine told young Wolverine too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. I don't know. That's pretty interesting.
That last part.
I know what he said.
I mean, what Wolverine and Psylocke isn't?
Yeah. I know what he said. Okay. He said, yeah, you're going to tap that ass.
But you know, it may seem weird, but if you've been reading X-Force and again X-Force, like Wolverine and Psylocke as a couple actually really makes sense.
It does. I had never looked at it before. Sense.
But apparently he's in love with her because old Wolverine tells young Wolverine, give her to me when she's injured. You know that I'm gonna take care of her.
Yeah.
Right. He knows. Apparently, Wolverine's in love
with her. Well, I mean, she's perfect for him. She's Asian.
She's a ninja.
She's a telepath. Like
that's
Jean. Totally in his wheelhouse.
But she's not a redhead.
But she's not redhead. But, no, but she's Asian. That, man. He's had tons of Asian women.
Yeah, he has.
But also, I mean, she kind of needs a boyfriend that can't die right now.
Oh, she's because out of her thing. That's true.
Basically, she had to kill Warren, mm-hmm. and then the last boyfriend has also died. Spoilers, people. Phantom X has died.
Oh, no.
She needs a boyfriend that can't die. So
Wolverine fits the bill.
And they're very similar in a lot of ways. The two of them. They've gone through a lot of changes.
Suffering together
they're
as well.
Very, both of them are action junkies. They both have a kind of serene side. You know, he's a samurai, she's a ninja. I think it'd be interesting to see if Remender gets to take them further. I don't think this is one of the issues that's getting rebooted in the Marvel now.
It's not a reboot, Khalil.
I think they're keeping
Uncanny X-Force.
I really enjoyed this. I've been enjoying Uncanny X-Force. I think it's definitely worth a buy. Rick Remender is doing a great job on Uncanny X-Force.
Well, for me, Uncanny X-Force, I stumbled upon it. I don't remember how. But I like it because it makes sense. My issue with a lot of these heroes is that you got some and they're unvarnished killers, you know. Wolverine, for one. I mean, yeah, he's got this noble
thing,
so, but he's a killer, you know. I like it because they bundled a lot of the same type of characters together and give them a real purpose. They're not they're doing like Punisher stuff and killing really nilly. You know, they're trained to do or protect the greater good with, you know, their dastardly aspects. I think that's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why the Psylocke thing is so interesting, because she's not a killer like the others. Mm. And that's why her story arc has been so, because she came on to kind of protect Warren and holding his mind together. She didn't have time to kind of hold her own mind together, and then having to kill so many things. I mean, from the time this book has started, she's kind of been wary of being on this team. And it's taken 28 issues, but I'm glad that it's been addressed in this way. She had a lot of stuff happen to her, and it's kind of interesting.
My next question to, now that we know that Genesis is going to go dark side, what are they going to do when they get back to the school? I mean...
I feel it. So I would like them not to do that. I mean, they keep saying it's going to happen. Mm. It's far more interesting to have, like I thought with Magic in the 80s, it's far more interesting to have a character who everybody thinks will go dark, or has the potential to go dark, mm-hmm. and still tries to be a hero. Like, that's far more interesting than just having somebody, he is a clone of Apocalypse, so he's going to be evil. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not as interesting.
I would like to see Genesis end up, you know, in the future, actually joining X-Force. You know, being one of the people on the roster that is going out there and taking names and kicking ass and that sort of stuff. I don't want to see him revert to being Apocalypse. That's been done, I think, since the initial AOA universe. Apocalypse as a character hasn't really returned to that level of potential.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree.
So doing something different with him, having him balance on that line between being a good guy and a bad guy, is what I would prefer to see from him.
And what I would like to see with regards to Genesis is this the entire nature versus nurture thing. And I think from a psychological perspective, that is very interesting. I think there's a lot of room for development of the character.
That's what we're dealing with now and there. That's what we're trying to work on.
That is all moot, because Wolverine and the X-Men and X-Men Legacy, which are the two books about the school, are both going away. So
they're going away?
They're not going to be in the new Marvel now.
Yeah, not a reboot thing.
They're getting finished. Which I think is unfortunate, because you know what?
But Wolverine and X-Men was a good seller, wasn't it?
It was a good seller, yeah. But it's not part of Bendis' overall vision for the X-Men. Yeah. But I really like... we don't know how AVX will finish, but...
Somebody's got to
do it. I do like the idea of having somewhere where the kids don't just have to be soldiers, mm-hmm. where they can, like, they can be, like, learn to use their powers. It's partly because I want to see an X-book that is about teenagers.
Mm. Yeah,
I've always
liked
New Mutants. I've always liked Gen X. And when Cal and Yost did New X-Men, I liked those kids as well. Mm. But Wolverine the X-Men I have been enjoying, and I think it's, if the kids are all just going to be soldiers, that's not interesting either.
I think for me with Wolverine and the X-Men, I like seeing Logan as a headmaster. It's a different side of him, but it isn't completely new, because he does have that kind of
And he took
nurturing
Kitty Pryde under his wing, Jubilee.
Mm-hmm. Kitty Pryde. Mm-hmm. Him being a headmaster of the entire school was cool, while still having to balance, you know, his more
feral side. Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I actually did agree. I didn't think that Wolverine, it made sense for Wolverine to be the person to start the school. I do like Kitty Pryde being the teacher, the headmaster of the school,
mm-hmm.
because it seems right for me that Kitty Pryde would be the person. Having been the youngest mutant and having
mm-hmm.
ushered in so many mutants, it makes sense for her to kind of be the head for this next set. If not her, then maybe Storm. But Wolverine's there, fine. I can do with that. Him and Kitty have a good dynamic. It's unfortunate that they're going to just do away with that title. And
I agree with you, Khalil. When I was growing up, I grew up seeing Kitty enter the X-Mansion, and I've seen all of her trials through Excalibur, everything as she has grown up, and I think it's a very good transition to see her now as principal.
Okay.
Next book. Okay.
Well, how do we rate this?
Have we rated it already?
Four.
Yeah, I'll go with a four.
Yeah, I'll give it a four.
Uncanny X-Force number 29, yeah. And definitely pick it up, and look forward to Uncanny X-Force number 30.
Yes, I definitely will.
Because I think it's going to be a lot of violence.
Okay, let's go into Green Lantern number 12.
Well, let's say
right.
Say
we're
Marvel.
We're kind of jumping around, weren't we?
Yeah.
Well,
we've dealt all Marvel so far, yeah?
No, we haven't.
No, we had Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah. Wonder Woman.
And Rorschach as well.
So we keep jumping?
Yeah, let's do Green Lantern. And okay. Green Lantern number 12.
I have a catastrophic, irrational fear of zombies, so anything to do with zombies, I love. Right? So
you love it because you're afraid of it?
Yeah, I know. It's how I cope with it.
That's a little twisted, man.
Yeah, I know, right? So Black Hand is back. He's as psychotic as he always was, and he has to face off against Hal and Sinestro, and he has the Book of the Black, and you know zombies are rising. You know, Hal and Sinestro have to deal with Black Hand, and then they go outside from the house where Black Hand was with his parents, his dead parents, and see the zombies have started to rise out of the ground, and they have to take care of them. Now, my only issue with what happened with taking care of these zombies is these guys are cosmic level superheroes. You know, they should, while they're not Silver Surfer, they are up there. They're cosmic tier. And seeing them have so much difficulty dealing with run-of-the-mill zombies is a little bit of a dumb down for me. You know, so because, you know, they're trying to deal with these zombies and they're draining their terror rings down to zero. I think that doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah, that was BS. I mean, the zombies in this, they weren't Black Lanterns.
Exactly.
Rings.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, I've seen Hal by himself create like a mechanical arm around the Earth so Superman and John can pull, you know, the planet. And here he is draining his ring down to zero.
Isn't that a Silver Age kind of thing?
No, this happened.
This happened in
the jail era, and Grant Morrison started.
Grant Morrison, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know, so these are things which I'm accustomed to seeing, and
yeah.
To see him.
They refer to them as Black Lanterns, but they don't have rings.
They even state that they don't have rings,
right.
And they seem very unfocused. You know, so I really don't know what was going on there. A nice dynamic that I liked was the Guardians. These guys have gone off the deep end.
Yeah.
I really don't know what's going on here, but I know that when the Guardians get involved in something, they normally tend to really, you know, screw stuff up. So seeing them like this, and they're definitely plotting. Normally when they're just acting altruistically, they really screw things up. So now that they're actually plotting to do something nefarious, I'm really wondering, you know, what's really going to happen
with
these
guys.
Well, to expand a little bit more on what Omar was saying, Sinestro and Hal, they went to look for the Book of the Black to kind of get, because it kind of prophesized what's going to happen. So they want to get a little insight into what the Guardians' plans were to get rid of the core. The Guardians want to get rid of all the cores, the green, the
indigo,
red,
the
indigo.
Red.
They see them as too right. It's too chaotic, so they want to replace them with the so-called Third Army. And Sinestro and Hal trying to get a little insight. The book, when they were reading it, transported them to Black Hand's home back on Earth, and Black Hand went batshit and six bunch of zombies on, like Omar said.
Mm-hmm.
What I found interesting is that we got to see some the plans that the Guardians have for the other GLs, the GLs they found most dangerous. Plans for Guy Gardner, plans for
Hal Kyle.
Well, the thing is, they think Hal doesn't have a ring, so that's a foil in their plans already.
Mm-hmm.
Black Hand, I like what happened, what he found in the book. Mark, you should like this because that means that this probably means that Hal is gonna
spoilers.
All right, well, spoilers. This probably means that Hal is gonna probably gonna die, and Mark's gonna like that because Mark is Mark hates Hal Jordan. I don't know why.
It's gonna be temporary, Mark.
Yeah, but it may not mean that he dies. He may be the first Black Lantern
as a life,
which would be very interesting.
I was trying to stop the spoilers, but you know, we're just went ahead anyway.
Like I said, this is Porterfield Podcast.
Okay, fair enough. I won't argue.
My other issue was the art.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, we had
art shifts.
Right. Yeah, we had
yeah, there are two artists for this, weren't there?
Guedes, or whatever his name is. He was on Superman a while back, and then it's just between him and Jim Califiore, right? Who I remember him was on. He was on Exiles, and the art styles are vastly different.
Yes, they are.
And it was very noticeable when it shifted.
Yeah, it was very noticeable. I prefer Doug Mike, who's the series regular. I love his art. I'm not a fan. I like Jim Califiore, but
I prefer Renato's.
I prefer Renato's art. It looks too.
It's very appealing with the zombies and the dark.
Creepy.
I like it.
I don't like it though.
But it still felt superhero. It's not like the work that's being done on, like, say, Animal Man or
compared
Swamp
to Doug
Thing.
Mike though. What do you think?
But I don't have a problem with Guedes's work or Califiore's. I just have a problem with them together in the same book.
Correct. Yeah.
And this seems to be an issue in a lot of the DC books.
Mm-hmm.
Deadline issue, maybe.
Yeah. Well. I know it's sometimes hard for artists to, especially with this kind of double shipping that some of the series are doing
twice a month
to get it out. But Chang hasn't been on Wonder Woman every month. They've had other artists, but
I barely noticed it.
Green Lantern, Birds of Prey, Superman. A lot of them have been having multiple artists on the same issue. Batman as well, and. In some cases, especially Birds of Prey recently, and in this issue, like, it was just kind of really
jarring,
because it's so different, the two kind of artists.
But then this is the first time it's happened in Green Lantern. It's been pretty consistent with the art. Doug Mike has been on for all 11 issues.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it hasn't
changes.
Happened in Green Lantern before, but it's happened to a lot of the other ones, and I wonder maybe if it's the speed that they've had to put out these issues that is the problem. What do you guys think about this Third Army?
I think it's very exciting.
It's very exciting.
I'm very excited. Yeah.
What was it going to be?
So the first army then would have been the Manhunters, and then the second army the Green Lanterns. So I'm quite pumped.
I don't know, it has to be something that can take out all of the Guardians, all of the cores.
Yeah.
Does it have to be because the Guardians seem to want to get rid of them first before they introduce the Third Army?
Maybe not.
The thing is, for me, my sense of it is that it feels almost as if there's a hidden puppet master behind the Guardians. The Guardians don't seem in character. Me, for one, Ganthet, from Kyle's run as
but Ganthet got the bottom ace, though, so that's
why. Yeah, that vexes me. I actually liked him. He's probably the only...
But you're supposed to like him.
Yeah, he has character.
But that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because he's...
Well, not anymore.
He's one of the first Guardians that you meet, and he's one of the most adopted characters.
Yep.
Right. And he started the Blue Lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I hope that it's not a letdown, I guess. I hope that the Third Army is not.
But they're building up to it since issue one, so it has
I
to
hope
be.
It's worth
it. It has to be worth it.
I think it will. I have high hopes for it.
I am curious to see what happens to Hal, though. Because
Mark hates him.
I don't hate him.
You hate him. You call him a gold licker. You hate him.
it's a strong. I prefer Kyle. If I had to pick the Green Lantern, he'd be my favorite. Honestly speaking,
I like Hal actually.
I like Hal.
Mm-hmm. Hal's same past, man.
I don't think so.
You know, day sitting in limbo.
I prefer Kyle, but I do like Hal as well.
I like Hal as well.
How do you guys rate this book?
I give this
a 3.5.
I give it a 3.5 because of the art. I love this book, but the art threw me off.
I give it 3.5 because of the plot hole. It just seemed a little too fickle with how they treat the cosmicness of these Green Lanterns. So
the power level, the inconsistent
power levels.
Zombies are very in style, and also you can't disrespect them.
That is true. I don't know what
I was thinking. I give it a 3. I wasn't as moved. I preferred the other Green Lantern books that came out this month, but Green Lantern.
Oh yeah, guys! Pick up Green Lantern Core as well. That's a bit of a tie into this. It's all about the Third Army, so check that out.
Yeah, we'll do.
And if you do like Kyle, like Mark and I do, you should probably check out New Guardians.
New Guardians. For me, I only give this issue 2.5. I mean,
get out of here.
No, I'm serious. I'm serious. I mean, they're too many.
But the spoiler in the end, dude. I mean, the last panel is epic.
I don't know if I would buy it, though.
You just don't like how it is.
I would borrow it.
Honestly, it had too many plot holes. I mean, you got two of the greatest Green Lanterns ever.
Yeah.
And they can't dispatch some zombies.
Zombies rule, Mark.
The zombies suck.
But they weren't even trying to. The zombies weren't even trying to kill them.
That's true.
They're
just walking around.
And they're just like shambling.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is that even with them destroying Sinestro's yellow battery, they still didn't dispatch Black Hand.
Yeah, he didn't die. But he's already dead. So.
But no, that should have shut off his ring. But it didn't. There are too many plot holes. The art is wishy washy. 2.5.
Also, when I saw that we were gonna destroy Sinestro's his battery, I was like, oh my goodness, something major. But then he says, I can make a new one. It's like, what the hell, come on. Anyways, moving on.
Captain Marvel number 2. Mark, whoop. You read this one?
Yep, I did. I guess it's kind of funny, I end up, you know, reviewing the two books this week with female characters.
Pervert.
But no, these are two very strong.
I know.
I think.
What does that mean? It can't be a
pervert. For me, yeah.
Well, no. I mean, neither one of these books is a TNA book.
Okay.
True.
Not true.
The female characters are both being well developed. Captain Marvel 2 is only 2 issues in, obviously, but it's giving a very interesting direction for Carol Danvers. For the longest while, she's gonna be dancing on the edge of being Marvel's premier female hero, the answer to Wonder Woman in some ways. With this series, she has the potential of finally being the premier female superhero in Marvel. The book starts out with a kind of slow pace. It's very much about Carol. It's very much describing who she is as a person, as well as painting a picture of who she is as a hero, no under the Captain Marvel mantle. But before long, we get some really cool, really sci-fi-ish type action. Captain Marvel, for you guys who don't know, and you gals as well, Captain Marvel has always been one of the more cosmically oriented heroes in Marvel. But Carol Danvers, she's only recently taken up the mantle of Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. There have been several heroes in the Marvel Universe, who've operated under the name Captain Marvel. And curiously enough, DC also had their Captain Marvel, but that was no longer, the case. So the name has been out there for a while, and this series is very much about Carol making the name hers. Again, this is a well-developed, well-structured female character. She's very strong, she's very competent, she's very capable. But what I really like about this issue is that they're giving her, instead of putting her back into space, so far she's had a bit of a, for this issue at least, she's gone a very sci-fi route. She's ended up being tossed somehow, it's not been explained fully yet, back in time, back around the time of the Second World War, the 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
She ends up teaming up with this behind the lines team of female, fighter pilot commandos, but she finds herself in that timeline facing up against technology that shouldn't be there. She's end up on some strange island where it's occupied by the Japanese army, and they've got strange tech. I mean, flying machines, ray guns,
very alien tech.
Mm-hmm. Very very strange tech. Very tech that Carol, even from her time, somehow recognizes. What I found really funny is that, even though she's been a full-fledged member of the Avengers for a while, she can't name at the drop of a hat a lot of the regulations for things like time travel. What is she supposed to do when she gets lost in time? What is she not supposed to do? That adds a bit of humor to it.
That's what I like about her, though. She's so not a stereotypical female. She's a ass kicker. She likes to punch first and stuff like that. I find that interesting.
You think that's not stereotypical?
I think, female, that's
a female? No, I don't agree.
I think female is more emotional. I mean, Jordan, she's not like Hal. She's a punch first.
But look at guns
and start shooting.
Look at the history of female characters in comics. Wait, you've got She-Hulk.
Look at her.
Very much punch first, ask questions later.
Wonder Woman
is a
no.
Lot.
I see what
you see. What I'm saying. Right?
Most women in comics are portrayed in their sluts or they're
secondary weak, kind of defer the male characters.
I mean, you know? Strong female characters, physically strong female characters do exist, but arguably females, I mean, female characters have shifted a lot from decade to decade, but we could point out the fact that even though Marvel has a lot of strong female characters, they seem reluctant to place them in solo books.
Okay, now that and, I would agree with. I would agree with.
And it's really good to see Carol in a... I mean, this is her third solo series.
Let's just see if it lasts.
But
her first solo series as Captain Marvel.
Yeah, her first is Captain Marvel. Kelly Sue DeConnick, who is the wife of Matt Fraction, is writing this book. And I think the strength that she's shown is definitely writing believable women. Carol and her friends, Helen Cobb and Joan, seem really strong, different, as in three distinct women. My problem so far, I think they could improve it, is the pacing of the story. For people who maybe bought the book because they like Carol or they want to see a strong female character, yes. But for those who want to see some more action, it's taking a while, even though it's been two issues.
It's taking a while to get there.
So the pacing for me could be improved. But Kelly Sue DeConnick's writing is really good. I think the art for this issue was better. There's not as much black as there was the last issue.
It has improved.
Dexter Soy has kind of dark washy style, but I really liked it this issue. Carol's hair looked really good. Her costume looked good. When she goes in the past, the commando girls all looked very... I mean, it's not a TNA book, but everybody looks very kind of compelling. And when she's flying, she looks really good. And so I thought that the art was better. It's still a little bit light on action. And I think I'm worried that people might drop this book because of that. It's, for me personally, it's not exactly what I wanted for a Captain Marvel book. Well, for a Carol Danvers book.
Yeah.
But I'm going to stay on it because the writing is so strong.
Well, it's only two issues in. I don't mind the pacing for these two issues. Mm. I don't mind that. If we reach, 11, 12 issue in, and the pacing is still at this point, then we've got a problem.
The problem is if it keeps at this point five issues in, it won't get to issue 11.
That's not fair for me. I think the writer has shown that she's capable. Carol Danvers as a character is popular. I think she well deserves having her own book. I'm anticipating that she's going to have that the pacing will pick up. I'm looking forward to that. That's not fair for me right now. The bottom line for me though is by the book, there aren't that many female heroes that have their own books. This is one worth picking up.
Correct.
My issue, and it's probably like a nitpicking thing, is her costume.
I hear that headpiece.
The headpiece boggles my mind, man.
Yeah, what's the point?
I don't understand the point. I mean, Carol, Captain Marvel, she's invulnerable, she's strong, she's like...
But that's a Tony Stark made outfit, right? I mean, it's supposed to have a purpose.
Why does she have a tactical helmet?
It's ugly.
It's ugly. To me, it doesn't serve any purpose. It doesn't, give her enhanced vision. It doesn't, allow her to breathe and exist in strange environments.
I think it's to go more with... there's a very kind of aviator style to the costume. And I think that the helmet's supposed to go along with that.
So it's just tall. It's not functional. It's just
she's a helmet. She's a pilot. And I think that even in the costume, you kind of get a feeling of that. It's both kind of military, but also kind of very aviator style.
I don't know. And how does she keep her hair in place? I mean, really,
she's got that new kind of mullet,
thing
going on. But it looked really good in this issue, much better than the last issue, I thought.
But yeah, this book is a pickup.
Carol Danvers is a good character. I hope that they give her a chance to grow in this series.
It's worth picking up.
Support this series, people.
Yeah, I'd give it a 4.5.
I hope it lasts more than 10 issues.
Really?
That's a big divergence right there.
Why 3?
I just thought it was a bit too slow.
I don't know.
I'm gonna pick it up. I haven't picked it up.
For a second issue, I don't mind the pacing. If we're 4, 5, 6 issues in and it's still this pacing, then we've got a problem.
Would you give it more? You give it a what?
You give it a 4. 4.5.
Yeah.
And 3 by Khalil.
I give it a 3.5. Yeah. I don't rate it as low as Khalil, but not 4.5.
Yeah. Maybe a 3.5.
Definitely not 4.5.
Kelly Sue DeConnick, please give us more Carol Danvers, but add in some more action. Thank you.
Alright, well, I think that's the last book. Maybe we should wrap up now.
Before we go, can I just plug another book that you guys should definitely pick up, even though we're not reviewing it? Shade number 11.
Shade number 11, yeah.
Please pick up Shade number 11. And if you haven't been following the Shade miniseries, I think there's only 12.
Yeah, 12 issues. 12. Yeah, one more to go.
Awesome.
Khalil Reeves is bold. Apparently, it's very, very good. I picked up number 11, but I started. I'm putting it back down because I have to go and read the first.
Okay, so I was raving about it. I still think every single page is a work of art. It is really good.
What's it?
Shade, just quickly for everybody, in case you should go pick it up. If you read Starman, then you know the character. If you haven't, he used to be a villain. Sometimes he's a hero. And each issue, the art has varied depending on the storyline. It's looking at his past to the present. But it has been really smart, really action-filled, very funny. And all the art that they've chosen works for each story. You get vampires, you get aliens, you get
mythical creatures.
You get superheroes from the past, actual superheroes, and you get mythical creatures. And all in all, Shade as a character is irreverent and interesting. You should definitely check it out.
Creative team killer?
I think it's James Robinson. I'm trying to open it up here.
Ed James Robinson and Fraser Irving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fraser Irving for this issue.
Oh.
But okay. Robinson is writing all of them, and it is. This is another one that if it comes out in a trade paperback,
I
will buy it in a hardcover.
Yeah,
I would.
Wow,
it is.
That's a strong statement.
Yeah. I think they're 12. Yeah, the next issue is the last one, and it is each one knocked out of the
Robinson's
bar.
One of my favorite writers, to be honest.
I can back Khalil on this. I have been reading it. I haven't been reading it as consistently, but definitely something to pick up when it comes out as a trade. It continues the kind of character development that you would have seen in Starman. Starman was written by originally
Robinson did a
by Robinson.
I did a series. He wasn't the first person, but he has written a kind of definitive.
Yeah, definitive Starman series. I did pick up that series back in the day when it was out. The Shade was one of my favorite characters because he does toe a line. You know, he has been a hero, he has been a villain.
Mm-hmm.
He's still one of those people that I think is very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
He's you know. Fully comfortable being himself and doing things for himself. He's not motivated by the greater goal of time, but he will put his neck out there. As a series itself is very well written. This miniseries with the Shade does have really nice art. It does, you know, touch a whole lot of genres like Khalil mentioned. And yeah, that's definitely an honorable mention for us.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're gonna Shade everybody. We're going to wrap up now, but before we go, I just want to tell you guys, you can come meet us this Saturday and Sunday at AnimeCon 2012.
Woo!
Mm-hmm. It will be Beyond Epic again.
Beyond Epic. This is going to kick some ass.
Already outside this booth, we'll be selling comics at a very cheap price. AnimeCon itself is going to be amazing. There's going to be cosplay, cost competitions. What's going to have, Omar?
There's going to be art competitions going on. We have some very talented guys there. We're going to have a hip-hop type rap battle with a whole bunch of superheroes and villains.
Awesome.
We're having, they're called the League of Extraordinary Poets. We have a Kamehameha competition going on there. We have, it's a whole bunch of really, really cool stuff. We have a whole bunch of different guests coming in from abroad. And just come and check it out.
And you should probably give them the dates.
Oh yeah, that's very important.
Like it said, this Saturday and Sunday, August the 25th and 26th.
Yeah, at the Lloyd Erskine Sandiford Center. $20 gets you in per day at the door. $35 for the entire weekend. You can get tickets from Comic Craze in Sheridan, Digital Plus in Lanterns Mall or the Costas Mall or Anime Spot on Bay Street. Or just hit me up, Omar Kennedy. You know how to reach me.
I'm also going to take this point to plug here. I'm going to be launching my very first graphic novel.
Woo!
AnimeCon.
You go.
And have a look-see.
Mark, all right. You want to give a little insight on what your graphic novel is about?
Graphic novel. It's called Bridgeland. It's a contemporary suspense drama based in, you know, Barbados. We've got romance. We've got love. We've got revenge. We've got a little bit of madness.
Is there any nudity, Mark?
For you, Wade, for you, there is
a little bit of nudity. All right. TNA.
Yeah.
basically, these two underprivileged brothers end up breaking into this rich man's house. It's a half-baked plan to begin with. Things go sideways. The rich man's son gets killed. And 12 years later, this rich man has spent a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money plotting revenge. It's called Bridgeland. Check it out on Facebook at Bolt from the Blue Entertainment. That's our Facebook page. And I'll see you at AnimeCon.
And also, our very own Khalil Gunn will be taking photos, so you'll look out for him as well.
I'll be the person walking around with the camera all day for 2 days.
Woo!
Are you cosplaying? I was thinking of cosplaying. I'm still not sure if I will.
Do it, man.
Come on. I'm cosplaying.
Yeah.
If I don't this year, you'll see.
Awesome.
All right, well, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, I think the problem is I don't want to cosplay in the same costume for 2 days. Yeah. So then I might try and figure out what I'll do for the next day. But I think if I don't do it this year, definitely next year.
Sweet.
Hey guys, check out our Facebook page at the Outsiders Comic Book Underground. You can follow us on Twitter at Outsiders Comics. And check out our podcast at outsiderscomicbook.blogspot.com or follow us on iTunes.